The following is a presentation of Project Independence and WCWP. Project Independence is the Aging in Place Initiative of the Town of North Hempstead. We provide programs and services designed to assist and support the older town residents who wish to remain in their homes as they age. If we don't currently provide a service, we will try and connect you to that service. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services.
Welcome to Project Independence and You.
Welcome to Project Independence and You. I'm your host, John Ryan, and my co-host today is Otto Lotz.
Morning, John.
And we have a very, very special show today. Now, everybody knows that since COVID began, we also have this on the TV. And I don't really like to read too many things, but I definitely do not want to not give Oscar his due. So our guest today is Oscar Michelin, who is a partner at the firm of Cuomo LLC. Oscar graduated, finishing in the top 5% from New York Law School, and he also served as the editor of the New York Law Review. He was in various different practices, and then it was in 2010 that he joined Cuomo as a member, and since has graduated. Nevertheless, he is now a partner in the firm. A couple of things that Oscar works on there, and we're going to talk about them all today. One, he works on civil and commercial litigation, which is very important, and people are hearing more and more about it today, but many people don't understand it. He recently founded an employment law practice that defends small and mid-sized businesses, and that, in this day and age, with all these monster corporations, is very, very important. But, and we will get to this last, and the most, not the most important thing, but one thing that makes Oscar stand out above so many men in his field is he has been able to get six people exonerated from death row, murder cases. He's been on a Netflix movie, which is amazing. And the point is, it's a passion of his, but when you sit here today with everything that's going on in the world, six men, I think it was a man, it could have been a woman, we'll talk about that. But nevertheless, the lives that were affected when these guys came home, the number of people touched because of his work, his ethic, I mean, it's just mind-boggling. And he's also was born in Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic. And that in itself, I want to touch upon. With all the craziness going on in the world today, you know, New York City is not the only place where people are born and become successful, caring attorneys. Good morning, Oscar.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Otto. Thank you for having me on.
No, thank you so much for agreeing to this. This is absolutely wonderful. I want to start, and Otto always does his homework and jumps in any time. You were born in the Dominican Republic. When did you come over here?
I came over very young. What's that?
When and how?
Yeah, so my family and I immigrated to the United States in the early 60s. We came actually under political asylum. We had to leave in a hurry. There was a dictator named Rafael Trujillo who had been overthrown, and his government was replaced by a very violent military junta. And what actually happened was there was a very large demonstration to overthrow the junta, and it was covered by the paper. And lo and behold, my father was in the middle at the front of the crowd trying to overthrow the military junta. He was very identifiable. This is the days before the internet. And so he knew that his days in the DR were numbered. Several of his close friends were murdered and tortured by the junta. And so we packed up a couple of steamer trunks, and he convinced his sister-in-law and nieces to come with us so that we wouldn't look like the family they might be looking for. It was 10 of us coming over, and even though there were only 5 of us in the family.
Okay.
And we came to the United States, and then he became a physician here, and we continued to live in New York ever since then.
That's wonderful. And also, in reference to your dad, I know I saw something, I didn't catch it 100%, like within the last 6 months, it was a street or something named for your dad?
Yes, up in Washington Heights. You know, when my father came here, there was not a large Dominican community. Most of the Hispanics and Latinos in New York were Puerto Rican. The Dominicans didn't really start coming in numbers until the 80s. But my father very early on started to coalesce the Dominican community. He was politically active in the Dominican Republic. He became politically active here. He ended up founding several Dominican cultural and humanitarian organizations. He was the founding member of the Dominican Day Parade and its first Grand Marshal, and opened up a series of medical clinics for the poor in Washington Heights that are still there today. He was the founder of Hostos Community College and its first president, which is not in the Heights, but is in the Bronx in a very, very Latino neighborhood. So, you know, this was a recognition of all the work he had done for the Latino community at large and the Dominican community specifically. So they named a street corner in Washington Heights after him. It was a marvelous testament to all the work he did.
That's amazing. And you know what also, and we're going to be talking about this later in the show, it's amazing because as altruistic as your dad was, it gets passed on. I mean, some of the stuff that you do, you know, obviously comes because you watch the man that you respected and say, my God, if daddy can do it, why can't I do a little something extra for somebody
My father was always family first and then service, community second. We always were out at events doing things, always letting us know that not everybody had it as good as we did.
Okay.
Be thankful for what we had and to try to make the community a better place.
Just going back also, when you said when you guys came in from the Dominican Republic, was that difficult then? Because it was more Puerto Rican at the time? I mean,
oh yeah.
There was definitely different faction, so to speak.
No, it was just that no one had ever heard of Dominican Republic. We've always thanked baseball for putting us on the map. At that time, it was Juan Marichal and the Alou brothers that people finally got to know who we were. But you're not going to believe this, but when you would fill out forms, the forms would say white, black, Puerto Rican. And my brothers were a lot older than me, 7 and 9. They would always tell me, listen, you draw a little box and you write Dominican. You know, if it says Latino or Hispanic, you could check that. But if it says Puerto Rican, draw a little box and you write Dominican because we got to be in there. So, you know, eventually in the 80s, by that time, and really, all joking aside, the prevalence of Dominican baseball players made people more aware of the island.
I'm not a baseball fan, but that name you said, the first name, I did hear of him.
Yes, the Dominican Dandy was what he was called. Otto may remember Juan Marichal, one of the greatest pitchers of all time.
Well, Juan Marichal, is he the guy who was involved with Roseboro, the catcher for the Brooklyn Dodgers? They had an incident.
That's it.
I was a big Brooklyn Dodger fan.
He pitched for the Giants, so yes.
Yes, I know who he is.
What was the
actually, I played golf with the foursome right before him. Right here in Queens, actually, Douglaston. He played golf there. There was a guy who knew him quite well, and he was a nice guy.
Yes, he was. Yes, we had met him a couple of times.
I can relate to the immigration part of it. I'm first generation, different German, but had similar problems when I was a kid. You know, back then, that wasn't so accepted, especially when World War II started. That didn't go over too big.
No.
And I remember being called many things that I didn't like. And, you know, I can very much relate to people who immigrate into this country.
Yeah, we all have to remember that for whatever the next wave that will come
exactly.
in and try to make a better life for themselves here. That's what the country's all about.
Yep.
I have a very good friend, a Jewish friend, and she's 83, 84 years old, and her father was, actually her father was the largest peacoat maker during World War II in the country. Anyway, he took her up one day, and I'll always remember this story, he took her to Harlem and looked around, and he said, the only difference between them and you is nobody knows you're a Jew. And he says, you can get away, she's blonde, I mean, people think she's Irish, but he says, don't ever think you're better than anybody, you know, and these people are being abused because they stick out. If they found out who you were, they're going to come after you the same. And this is, you know, obviously World War II and everything else. And it's just that, as you said, it stuck with her. And, you know, we talk about the different stuff, but it's just, Even today now, unfortunately, in quasi-situation, I have three daughters, two of which have converted to Judaism. I have six grandchildren, five of which are Jewish. It's a spooky time. My partner, Peter, who will be on the show later, I mean, he's Jewish and he basically says it all the time. He had his license plate as a joke was Latka. He changed it and went back to a regular license plate. He said, I don't want that on my car.
No, you know, you would think that we would have gotten over a lot of these sentiments, including especially anti-Semitism after all these years. But no, you see that it's still prevalent. It's something that we have to every day fight against. That's why here in North Hampstead, we have Not in Our Town. You know, it's a very strong message that we send.
I remind my family all the time that during World War II, I was between the ages of 4 and 10 during that whole stretch. And I remind my family that had we not looked different, we would have wound up like the Japanese people in internment camps, because the only difference was we didn't look different in theory compared to other people. And I remind my kids of that and grandchildren that, very easily my family could have ended up in internment camps if they would look different, quote unquote.
And people, just really quickly, John, because I know we have to get to, but one of my best friend's fathers came during World War II from Italy. And people don't know, Italians were interned when they first got here. He was in a camp, had to wear a jacket that said enemy on the back. And he tells a great story that several years later, he gets drafted for the Korean War. And he says to them, I was enemy. You know, you can't draft me. I was an enemy 5 years ago. And I said to him, well, how did that turn out? And he pointed to this picture on the mantle of him and two other Italian guys making coffee on a frozen mountain in Korea. He goes, this is how it ended up. This country, pazzo. He goes, crazy. He said, so, yeah. He goes, I was an enemy. And then they put a rifle in my hand.
You know, from that point of view, and it's a shame, and it's not a tangent, because when we talk about stuff on the show, we just talk. But it is so pathetic that it's the color. You know, if you stick out with the crowd, they can hate you easier than if you blend in with everybody. They have no idea what you're on. You could be the most violent, vicious, killer, prejudiced, racist, whatever you are. Makes no difference. You're a white boy or girl or whatever it is, but just getting a little darker or there's something a little different about you. And even that goes to special needs kids. I mean, they get ostracized too in a different way. My wife's a special needs teacher. It's heartbreaking sometimes, the story she comes home with.
Rachel.
Yeah, and it's not going to change, unfortunately. I mean, I shouldn't say that. You have to be positive for the future. I think my oldest grandson is 10. He's a good boy, because my daughter constantly, you know, if you don't say something nice about somebody, don't say it. The years of picking on somebody and being a bully and making fun of the fat kid, the short kid, the kid who wore glasses, or whatever it was, they're gone. The teachers even have a lot less tolerance. And you have to.
Yep,
you know, you can't just keep making fun. But you know what? I'm getting the signal from Dan. It's time for our first break. This is amazing. And it's just the conversation we have, which goes so nice and smooth. We're here talking with Oscar Michelin this morning on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll be right back.